G'day, folks. Talk to Danny and Laura Banford from Hearts and Minds Barber Emporium. Man, the journey that they've been on, where it all started through the armed forces, the military, through Australia, over to Northern Ireland, and all the steps in between, from there back over to Oz and start up their barbershop enterprise. And it's just on the rise for these guys. Awesome stuff. And want to thank our sponsors, Permabil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here, and they got great assistive tech also. So righto, let's get into it.
Keep rolling with Jake Briggs.
Oh yeah.
Righto, we're rolling. Danny, Laura, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, we've got two accomplished barbers here, husband and wife, and he's a running Hearts and Minds Barber Emporium. And I'm stoked because I get me hair cut there. I'm looking sharp, so thanks for that. But I just really want to know where the name Hearts and Minds stems from.
It's hard to answer that question without going back into like where it started, as it like
where it all stemmed from.
Where it all came from, yeah. So it began with Daniel and I, whilst we were living in Wales. Daniel was at that stage serving in the Marines. And I was working from home. I was hairdressing from home. I had a salon Daniel put together for me at home.
Not the only builder.
Well, we had decided that... Such a hard question to answer, right, without explaining how we ended up at that point. But so I had two boys, and Daniel was like, we were married, so Daniel's two stepchildren. We were a blended family, is the way I pretend, the way I prefer to say it. Can I answer that again?
That's all good.
Let me just cut down.
Go ahead, Danny.
You jump in when you're... So the name Hearts and Minds for us was, I guess it was a long story, but we had a bit of a vision that we were going to open a barbershop, and in that in itself came from a few different facets of our life, basically. But Hearts and Minds initially is a term the military use for when you go to a new country. The first thing you have to do is win the hearts and minds of the people.
Yeah, yeah. That makes total sense now, yeah.
But, I mean, that was kind of like the thought, the initial thought, yeah. I guess. Is that right?
No. Initially it came from reading scripture from the Bible.
Yep.
And it talks about the peace of Jesus that will stand guard over your hearts and minds. And then when I said to Daniel, oh, this is hearts and minds, and he says, really, hearts and minds? Yeah, well, why not? And then...
That sounds good.
And then he was like, that has a military reference. And I was like, oh, really? Right, okay. And then we ended up in Tookley around the corner from a veterans hostel. And we had all these old veterans coming in as our clients. And so it was just like, between scripture and the military, it just came together.
Yeah.
And when was the decision to become a barber? Like, when did that sprout in your mind?
So that would have come about in 2015. So, as Laura was saying, I was in the Marines and I was starting to get to the stage where I was looking at leaving and coming up with trying to... The hardest thing you'd ask any soldier a lot of the time is, what are they going to do when they leave? Because it's not an easy thing. So all my friends were leaving to do... different roles in security, like close protection or bodyguarding or surveillance or marine. So they're
is
all
that a typical role that that's a lot of people take on when they leave the army? Yeah.
Well, the environment that I was in, that's what the guys were leaving to do.
Yep.
So you kind of have to choose which one what kind of stream you want to go into. And I spent about 6 months, maybe longer, looking, speaking to people, trying to figure out which one was the best for me and my family and things like that. I was going to black tie events. And, you know, it just wasn't clear for me, basically. I would be speaking to guys who were doing it, and it didn't seem good. Like, it wasn't what I wanted for me or my family. So I remember leaving one time thinking, this is hard. Like, I'm just going to stay in, I think, because I've got no idea.
Like, just stay in the army.
Stay in the military, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So with the military, like, because you served, like, with the Australian military and also
the Royal Marines.
The Royal Marines, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a bit of a – with everything to do with that, with Australia and over in Great Britain, is it sort of much the same of how it all works mechanically? Or
in general, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
But for myself, there were two different worlds, because I did two different roles with the Australian Army and the Royal Marines.
Mm.
So the experiences were different, positive and negative.
Yeah.
But yeah, getting back to how the barber came about.
Yeah, yeah.
I left a big event one night, and I was just like, that's it, I've got no idea what I'm doing. And I literally went to bed and woke up the next morning. Well, people may believe it or not, but I literally woke
up.
I was like, yeah, like an epiphany.
Yeah.
I believe it was God telling me. Yeah. But I mean, it was like an epiphany saying, barbering. And I was like, what? Barbering? I'm not going to be a barber.
Yeah.
I've never cut hair before. Why would I want to be a hairdresser? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm a Marine, not a hairdresser. That's what Laura does. And then it just stuck in my mind for a few weeks. And then I'd talk to Laura about it. And we were just like, all of a sudden, I was looking into barbering videos, and it seemed really cool. And I was like, this is something I want to do. Like, this is, I could have a bit of that. Like, go hang out with the lads all day, cutting hair in a cool shop. You know, that appealed to me.
Yeah.
Like, I loved the military.
Yeah.
But, like, I wasn't going to leave the military for something that wasn't going to have the
intense challenge.
The challenge or the excitement. Yeah. I feel
because you've got the brotherhood that it would have, and, like, with brothers and sisters within the military, and does it feel like some of the culture that you have, like, within the shop with, you know, if it's the people that are coming in, getting their hair and their beard and everything done, or if it's the people you're working with, it's that same sort of camaraderie but different in a sense, yeah?
Mm.
It definitely is different.
Mm.
But where it's not different is, thankfully, we work alongside guys and girls who are mega passionate for barbering, and you know, we're in an environment where it's quite positive.
Mm.
You know, we're always trying to help each other and get each other better, and and be like, oh, that's a, you know, little things like that's a sweet fade.
Yeah, there's lots of positive encouragement and just sharing our knowledge and our, you know, the desire to grow and be better is kind of throughout.
That's what we've tried to build, that environment of, like, instead of egos.
Yep.
Because egos is pretty.
Oh, and you get it everywhere.
Bad, dangerous.
You'd be seeing it in the barbershops, you'd be seeing it in the military. It doesn't.
Yeah.
They're everywhere. It doesn't matter where you go. Yeah.
So we try and, like, squash any ego and just build a team environment.
Yeah. And it's good. Like, I love. To me, it feels like a resurgence of barber culture in Australia as a whole, and just where, you know, it's not just going in and getting a haircut, it's the experience, the culture of it, you know, going in and having a yap, talk, just a camaraderie between, like, the other people at it, getting the beer done, getting the hair, sitting down, you know, if it's cracking open a beer or, you know, or a coffee, and, you know, just sitting down and having a general yarn and taking the piss and just, or whatever it may be, just. And just what that is compared to what it was a long time ago. Like, and you've seen it, like, around Australia as a whole, and, you know, I've really embraced it. I love it. Like, I love, you know, I really enjoy coming down there and, you know, making a, you know, an hour of it or two or whatever it may be to, you know, just to chill, have a yarn, you know, get the beer done, get the hair, sit down, have a beer.
That's all we want, like.
Power
that's
hour.
Hey?
It's your power hour.
Yeah, that's it. And that's where me missus, Amy, she gets frustrated. She goes, what, you bloody in there for an hour or what, an hour and a bit, getting your head and beard on? I've gone, yeah, just chill. You know, you get that done when you get your hair. You're gone for bloody 4 hours. When you get your hair done, it's like, just chill. I like taking my time.
It's not only good for us to be working in that environment and you get, like, your mates coming in, because that's what it's like. Like, your mates come in and you talk a bit of banter and hang out and they're having beers and joking and having community. But then it's also, for a lot of dudes who are working flat out, you know, that's the only time they sit down. Maybe they're working in Sydney. They come back and the kids making dinner. Like, when they're in that chair, that's half an hour or an hour, whatever's going on, where they're untouchable. Like, no one can get to them. It's just their barber and them.
Just time out.
Just chill. Yeah. If they don't want to talk, that's cool. Like, don't talk. Like, relax.
And you're talking dudes, but... So how is it now? Because you just see all this, I see some conflict within the community about where you have some barbershops and they just won't have a barber putting females on, which I reckon is crap.
Yeah.
You know, because it should be a community as a whole. So how do you...
Well, girls are more than welcome to come in and they do.
Do you come mean come in or work?
Either. I see it a lot, mainly with working. And you'll have... You know, and where you'll have some people come in and where they won't want females touching their hair.
Like. It's a male-dominated industry, and it has been for many years. But there are some fantastic, really highly talented barbers, female barbers, across the country. And there are some real key people in the industry that are building and strengthening that platform for the younger female generation growing up through it. And I think it's really important. And they're doing the one lady in particular, Colette Saunders. She owns and operates Australian Female Barbers Association. And she's built a massive online platform and speaks for girls and showcases their work. And it's just built a real community and support for female barbers coming up through. I think it's really important to do because there's a lot of... I face a lot of, what's the word, rejection?
Yeah.
Like, kind of sexism, whatever it is.
When we first opened the shop in Tookley, you know, I'd only been cutting for two years tops. You know, Laura had been cutting hair for, at that stage, what?
Easy 17.
You know, a heap of years. Fellas would be coming in and they would, Laura would say, do you want to jump in the chair? I'd be like, no. They would blatantly say no.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait for me.
Yeah. They're just in their ways. These were older generation. A lot of them were maybe 70, 60, 70, 80. And they had never even had a female cut their hair before. They just went to the old barber and that was it. So it was completely alien to them. So again, in comes the... How do you overcome that? And it's you win their hearts and minds. You get the opportunity. You kill them with kindness until they finally let you have a go. And then you give them the best haircut that you've ever that they've ever had.
Yeah.
And you change their perception, like just one person at a time.
Yeah.
But yeah, many of them used to say, I'll just wait for him. I'll just wait for him. But once they trust you, then that's it. They're a customer and they'll come back and they'll ask for you and they'll prefer you over someone else. And yeah, you get...
And on that note, someone just won Australian Female Barber of the Year in 2019.
Dang.
Yeah.
Own that.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And even having some of the people within the atmosphere in the shop that you got there, like...
You've got the best Caitlin. Girls in there,
Like Caitlin, like she does an awesome job. Caitlin's like she did on the weekend.
Yeah.
Hair big, like she kills it, you know.
Caitlin's fantastic.
You know, because I've... been to a fair few barbers now, you know, over the years, and she's killing it big time. So, yeah, he's got a good one there, and you guys are
she's
killing
fantastic.
It too.
She's fantastic. We really, really value Caitlin. And
the rest of the team, we've got a good team.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, we use it growing.
It's an inclusive space. It doesn't matter if you're female or girl. It's about the attitude and the work the ethic thing, yeah. and yeah. the passion. So if that's all there, it doesn't matter if you're
doesn't female, female,
short, black, tall, water. Black, white, whatever.
Black, white, or yeah, Grindle.
That's it. Right. That's it. Good. It's about the heart.
Yeah. So with the whole process of what are the natural steps of becoming a barber and getting immersed in that culture?
In Australia at the moment, it's you've got to go TAFE and do an apprenticeship through TAFE and in your barbershop. There's a few different avenues you can do, but currently that's what it is here.
Yeah, and you have some of those other registered training authorities that
private ones. Yeah, you can come out and do like a prior, the RPL stuff RPLs, and that's all right. that. There's a few different avenues that you can do. We both qualified in the UK.
Yeah, nice.
And, continue to learn here. Like, we still go on courses here. We've just come back from a course with Menspire, who are like one of the world's leading educators in male hairdressing. So that was an awesome week. We spent a week with them, with one of our guys, Vinny. So with the idea that we invest in our team to bring it back, we invested in Vinny for him to come, and then we'll share it with the rest of the team. We'll get together and download everything that we've brought back and
give it to the team. That's good. And he's a wizard with the scissors and cutthroat too. So he's really good. So that's where you guys met, like back in the UK? Because that's where I wanted to jump into you're originally from Northern Ireland,
So we're both, so I'm originally from Northern Ireland, and then I came over here when I was younger. Long story, was in the army over there, and then I went back to the UK when I was 26, and then that's when I met the lovely Laura. In Belfast.
No, that's awesome. So, and that's, Belfast, Northern Ireland, So I've always been intrigued in the culture, like not just Ireland but Northern Ireland and the differences between both. And obviously, over time with the unrest, IRA, all that sort of stuff. So what's the culture like back then when you were younger and what's it like now?
Back then, growing up, I grew up in the 80s. I was born in 83, so it was not uncommon for me to walk out of the front door and there would be a soldier crouched at the gate with a rifle just on guard at the front door of our house. We just lived in a big Victorian three-story Victorian terraced townhouse type, and it stretched.
Terrace, not terrorist.
And it was a long stretch of road, and the top half of the road was Catholic and the bottom half was Protestant, and right in the middle there would usually be riots or people would gather. Something would kick it off. Maybe it was
All I know from that when you're saying with the Protestants and the Catholics, right, is only when I think of the Scottish Soccer League when you got Celtic and the Rangers. That's all I know. So
something like that could kick off a riot. If there was a Celtic and Rangers match on, there was a particularly high profile match, it would be cause enough for something to kick off a riot between maybe 18 to 20 odd year olds. And
depending on the result, depending on what happened, how much drink was consumed.
It's just that conflict between the two. Religion, it was just religion and politics. And you grew up, it was very much that divide. You're on that half, you're on that half. You cross over, you're at risk of, getting jumped, attacked on both sides. A lot of people suffered over the years. Just from my point of view, from growing up, from what I saw, Yeah, I just remember lots of soldiers walking the streets, patrolling the streets and checkpoints. And but you get on with your daily life. It's it's just normal.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You just be acclimated to the situation because it's happening all the time. Yeah. So it just seems like it's normal, yeah?
Mm. So there wasn't always as many things to do on... I grew up on the Catholic side. And I always remember just to go to a swimming pool, there was none that you could walk to, you know, like a public swimming pool. So, yeah, they were pretty much mostly on the Protestant side where I grew up. So we used to...
Oh, so you're saying, like, the Catholics, like, they're the ones that look down upon on that side?
Yeah, they were kind of... didn't have as many services or the...
So the Protestants were up the high end of town and you got the Catholics.
More jobs, more houses, more...
Really?
Yeah.
That's full on.
Mm.
You know? And just... Because, you know, that's a section of Great Britain and would they ever sort of intervene or anything? Oh, no, you know what I mean? You don't... Yeah. You wouldn't want people from over there really coming over and trying to sort everything out, but... No. I don't know, just having that cultural divide, that's pretty full on. Like,
I mean, there was the programs that were put in place throughout the years to try and build relationships between the younger generation through schools and things like that. So you would go on residentials with like across community projects, and there were people good youth leaders that were stepping up in those roles and trying to encourage the youth not to come off the street and stop rioting, come into the clubs, let's get the two sides together, let's try and build relationships, healthy relationships, and move away from the troubles, move away from how it used to be. So yeah, some of those things worked. Like I grew up in a house where I was never... My mum came from a mixed marriage, so my granddad on her side was Protestant and my grandmother was Catholic. So my mum brought us up to not have like any bitterness or, you know, anything towards you.
Like not being this and that's them and that's us sort of thing.
So I was really grateful for her positive perception on things and keeping me... and learn that way.
Yep.
But that's not always how it was. A lot of people were brought up and it was instilled into them, like, oh, them, you know, these people Brits. Doing that. Yeah, soldiers. Brits, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Protestants.
So soldiers were, like, really not welcome in the area. They were targeted. They were a threat. They were threatened and targeted, yeah. And, yeah, that's how it was. It was just constant stories on the news. Every day you would get up. There would be another person shot dead or another bomb and under a car, or, you know, just constant attacks and things that got going on.
But, like, with the culture with it now, has it changed, like, a fair bit? Like,
Belfast is an amazing city. It's got amazing restaurants and culture and, you know, it's got a really, really good vibe and atmosphere. And the people... are the best. Like, the people are just...
friendliest people you'll ever meet.
That's awesome.
Hospitable, and they're just welcoming, and they love people coming into their city and visiting and showing them around and hosting them, and they'll bend over backwards to make you feel welcome and host you. So the people are definitely, like, such a... you know, I'm proud to be Irish. So the culture... like, the city is great. It has... really come a long way. Lots of investment in it, lots of real good quality places to eat and museums and the Titanic quarters, and there's lots of culture and history to see, like amazing buildings and universities and stuff like that. Within some of the suburbs, yes, there's still an element of organizations and groups that are intent on trying to, you know, keep the past or bring the past back and continue to fight and stuff like that.
Like, but just get the Brits out sort of thing. Yeah. That sort of sense. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's good to know that it's really building up and people are putting investment in the air, and because, you know, just trying to not be a them and a us sort of situation, and just trying to keep the community, you know, keep the equilibrium as balanced as you can, you know. So, no, that's awesome. And and how's the so you still got a fair bit of family like back home and that, yeah? Like,
So I have my one brother and two sisters left back home, and they have two of them have three kids each, and my brother has one daughter. My parents have passed away, and my grandparents and all are passed away. So yeah, they're my main family back home. Yeah.
Oh, sorry to hear that, but
it's all good.
Yeah, yeah. It's all good. But and that's what I've always been intrigued on. So with accents, like up north, like, do you have different dialects around the country, like accent, like you'll know someone if someone's from some southern mid of island to
20 minutes away.
Oh, really?
So Daniel's mom and dad. Daniel's mom and dad are from a little town called Strid, which is about 20 minutes drive from Belfast.
Yeah.
And it's real country twang, like.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And his dad's been out here now for about 27 or 28 years, and he still sounds exactly the same. So it's funny. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, because that's what spins me out, just even over in England. Like, it's not even a big country, and just going from, like, say, from London to...
to Liverpool.
Yeah.
It's heaps
and
different.
It's totally... And then from London to... I mean, Liverpool to Manchester and like just all their little dialects, and then, you know, then up the road you got Scotland, and then that's a whole other, and language. And then in Wales, like, because, you know, I've had some people talk Welsh to me, and I was like, Jesus, like, I didn't expect, you know, someone with that accent to have that language. Yeah. Is that similar to, like, the Irish Gaelic? It is, yeah, or...
There's some sort of Celtic connection between them all. I don't know too much about it. We lived in South Wales, and I think the Welsh language was more used up north, like more commonly. Like, that's not to say that nobody speaks it in the south, but I think it was more common to hear in north, from what I know. But like I say, I'm no expert. We learned Gaelic in primary school.
Yep.
Then once you went to secondary school, it was brushed away if you weren't... if you weren't able to do French and something else as well, so we just decided that we would get out of Belfast. My mum passed away, and that was kind of deciding factor for us. I had a business back in Ireland. I was leaving, you know, I wasn't ready to really leave that prior to the Christmas that followed, when I really had this just realization that, like, I can start a business anywhere over again. I can do this anywhere. What's really important to me is family.
Still, like, religion, that's really important to you guys, and or just the not religion.
Religion's burnt me. Religion scarred me and put me off. Like, but relationship, like, I always knew God was in my life, and I always knew that He was who I turned to whenever I was struggling, whenever I was dealing with stuff growing up. I cried out to God. But the whole label in it, to be a Catholic or a Protestant or a such and such, for me, it's not about titling it and giving it religion. It's about relationship and just being able to communicate with God in my own way, the way I speak, my dialect. And he gets it, and he meets me wherever I am, whether it's in the car, whether it's in work, or just whether I'm in an emergency or whatever. It's just that constant in my life that no matter if everything else falls apart,
God's good.
That never changes. And for me, that's, coming out of hard experiences growing up.
Yeah, I'm hearing you.
Drove me.
Yeah,
well, it's closer and closer, and
that's right. Okay. And it's forged who you are today, you know, both of yous. That's awesome. And you're in Wales, and so that's, and you're still serving, and so that's when the realization of the scissors, the cutthroat, the razor.
Yeah.
So that's when you had that epiphany moment of, I'm going to jump in and give this a crack.
Eh? Yeah, so from there, I just asked Laura. Laura was already cutting hair from the house. So I just said to her one day, hey, can you show me, basically. So we got the neighbour, Kian, his name was. He came over for like a two-hour haircut.
And, what did his bloody head look at, like, at the end of it?
It was red and curly to start with. He had like this real Celtic red curl in his hair. Yeah.
Yeah, so he came over and she just took me through doing my first haircut. And then from there, I was hooked. So we had a garage and one half of it was sectioned off for Laura to do hair
like
properly. And then the other half was like the garage with a barber chair and a bit of a light and a mirror. And that was me practicing. So from there, that was where it all started, from my journey anyway. Getting all the boys over and giving them free haircuts. I started a little Facebook page called Royal Barbers, and there I was just advertising, and I was charging, like, at the start it was free. I just wanted to cut hair.
Yeah, just getting the skills up.
Getting the skills up, and then I would charge, like, $3, which is $5 for a haircut. And I was giving them the full treatment with the hot towel, giving them a beer. So I was, like, losing money, and I'd be cutting their hair. And practicing all my shaves and the fades. And so that's how it all started. I'd be doing marine stuff during the day, and then I'd come home and have like two people, three people booked in, cutting late into the night. And then from there it just spiraled into like loving it, passion.
I can see the excitement in your face, brother.
Yeah.
You know, that's good. What I love. Plus, having a good teacher here too. Helping you out along the way as well, you know. Yeah.
And then from there, it was like, okay, this is what we want to do. Like, let's create a space where I want to hang out. I want to work. You know, we want to work and hang out. Like, and we're going to get hang out with other people who are into this and just create a good environment. So, we made this decision that we were going to move to Australia with the kids.
We decided to have another one.
Yeah, so
we decided that we planned Harrison. We were like, should we have a little one together or not? And we came to the decision that we would try. And yeah, we were blessed, and Harrison was conceived, and we planned to move over here beside his mum and dad to bring him up close to his mum and dad. Yeah. It was kind of nice to have grandparents around for a little one, so it was like, if we're going to do it, we'll move over here.
So I just had to go in and tell my boss, who was like, you know, a 20-year paratrooper and a 20-year Marine, who's like done everything, that, hey, I'm leaving the Marines. I'm going to move to Australia with my family and open a barbershop.
Straight up, just told him that.
Yeah, and they were looking at me like I was crazy, like, because I was at that time. It was mental, like, I couldn't hardly.
Because they just thought you would, if you would have left, like you would have went down that typical route at inner security or.
Yeah. But even moving to Australia was a big enough thing. Like,
we didn't have a young family too.
Like, we didn't have visas at the time. Like, I had a visa, but like Laura and the boys didn't have visas. So they give you like a year to leave, basically. So in that year, you've got to plan your life, basically. So we had to make sure that the visas had come back. In that time, I had to go and get qualified as a barber, and that's when I went to a good place called Gents of London under a really good teacher called Thomas Lloyd, and he taught me how to barber, basically, because it was a good idea moving to Australia, opening a barber shop. That sounds good, but you need to be able to cut hair properly. So, from that... we're just cutting.
Yeah.
In Oman. We went to Oman for 6 weeks.
In
Oman.
Country.
Yeah, the country, yeah. So that's really where it all kind of, the cutting kicked off, because there was another paratrooper I used to work with who was a barber. So when we were out in Oman doing all the stuff, they would come in at night time and I'd be like, to all the boys, give us, like, can I cut your hair? And he'd be taking me through it as well and showing me. Like, I literally had borrowed a clippers off the medics. So they had to have a pair of clippers. I had a bottle with some water in and a hole in the top. I had little paper scissors. I got a comb from somewhere.
At least he's like Gorilla Barber.
That's how I was cutting hair. I was using the clippers and I'd be using these paper scissors just to cut the hair. And the boys would be sitting there. Yeah. I'd even give them free Pepsis just to get them in to cut.
So that's when you told the boss,
I'm out of here.
They thought you were nuts.
Yeah.
So then that's when you worked up over that year. So, and then where'd you land when you got over here? And then, and was that hard, like, working it out from that side, making sure everything over here was fine, you know, because you got the kids and then school and then setting up the shop or whatever you had to do. So,
well, this
was that
a thing,
bit tricky?
It was tricky because we had no money, for one. We had to sell everything. We came over here in November 2016 with literally a suitcase each. Thankfully, my dad was in a position that the house next door to them came up for sale. So he bought that as an investment. And so that was the house that we were going to move into because we didn't know really at the time, like shortly before we arrived, where we were going to live because it would have been hard to get a house with no rental history. So we moved in next door to our parents. And
initially we were looking at it like a blank canvas. So we were working and saving to pay for all the things that we needed to do because it was expensive. Visas cost us about 10 grand, flights, all that stuff, like everything cost. We brought one box and really just had like photos and just sentimental stuff. But aside from that, there was just one suitcase each. So they did offer us to come to where they were, his mum and dad, just to make it a bit easier for us. And then we could decide, they said, when we get on our feet, where we want to base ourselves. And we had looked at, you were keen on Darwin, we looked at
Newcastle,
we were looking at YouTube videos online, because I had never been to Australia before, so I didn't know what I was coming to at all.
You know, on Google Maps,
yeah.
Way you can like zoom down and like, press forward.
Walk straight.
Walking Tookley.
Oh, this is us.
Do you think this guy's need a barber shop here? But yeah, that was literally true. So we took them up on their, like, it was a blessing for us. It really helped us to get on our feet. So we lived next door to them, and his mum and dad helped us build the garage. Daniel was able to work.
Open a barbershop in the garage, like it's on the main road. So we're like,
straight away, we were here for a week, and the barbershop was built in about 4 weeks. Like,
yeah, I mean,
three or four weeks after my dad painted it.
My dad did a really good job of like a garage barber. Like, it wasn't just a.
We had already bought the domain name Hearts and Minds back in Wales,
had the logo,
designed over there.
Oh, really?
So yeah, we kind of like did it in faith.
Well, that's where the origins are from. So that
that's
awesome.
So we knew that we were going to do something like Hearts and Minds was happening.
Didn't know what it looked like.
Yeah.
Like where it was going to be, what was it going to involve, financially how we would do it. We just knew we had our hands and we could do stuff. We could work.
So the garage was built the way with the same colors, like the black roof. Black and white walls with the wood timber. It was all done on a smaller scale in the garage to what it is today. Mm. And put a sign at the front of the road and just sat there and just waited. Facebook. And I ended up getting pretty busy in the first 6 weeks of the shop, like of me cutting in the garage. So it was pretty good. I'm pretty happy with it. And then we planned, we had like a little bit of a vision, like a time scale, and the idea was in a year's time we'll maybe look for a shop. So about 6 weeks in, you know, it's going okay. I'm starting to cut a few people. A guy walks in the back and is like,
"Need more sinks."
He comes in. I thought he was a customer. I'm like, hey, mate. I was doing the towels, getting the towels ready. I was like, hey, mate, you after a haircut? And he's like, are you the barber? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, he was from the council. Boom.
Oh.
Closed me down. I was like heartbroken. It was like, we're just.
Put a bit of money into it and did it all really well and like thought it was decent.
It'd be okay, like, you know what I mean? So I was like nearly in tears. Like, this was, how am I going to provide here for my family? Like, and at the same time, Laura was working at a hairdresser's in Tuggerah. So we were like, we were just trying to get up.
Yep.
And then, yeah, so I went next door. I'm sitting next to my parent, like, having a cup of tea, just pretty
deflated.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, what are we going to do here? I don't, like, what's the plan like? And I hear a knock on the door at our house from across over the fence. And I go in and stick my head over, and it's a fella who I know now as Al. Like, he's an older gentleman who lives in the Tookley area. And he said to me, are you the barber? Yep. Go into town and speak to Dave. Dave's Barbers in Tookley. He's trying to retire. And he knows.
I knew that used to be the barbershop where.
In the arcade.
Yes.
Like in the arcade.
Yep.
So he goes, just go down and speak to him. Like, he didn't know anything about the council guy coming or what.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we went down and ended up, hey, Dave, you know, speaking to Dave. And he basically just.
Well, we were blessed. Like, we didn't have the money to buy Dave's barbershop. Dave had his barbershop for sale for a while previous, and we didn't have $20,000 to go and buy a barbershop. So that wasn't an option for us. Yeah. So we just looked over it. But when this guy said to Daniel, look, just go down and see Dave. He just wants someone that's going to look after his customers. I think he should go and see him. So Daniel did go and see him, and Dave explained that, you know, he'd been offered money for it by some other people, and he wanted the right person, and that money wasn't about money.
Yeah,
it was about people looking after his customers.
Yep.
So
were you cutting hair in there first with him?
No. He says, listen, I'm finishing here.
He just wanted to get out, and he was tired, and
yep,
he had an injury at his elbow.
He had to move to his family out in Gulgong. So he was moving out there anyway.
Mm.
So long story short, he just said, yeah, look.
You know, we'll transfer it
over. The lease over to you. And we were like,
what?
What? Yeah. Amen. Like, Jesus. What is going on here? Yeah. This is.
You would have just fallen back and passed out. You know, you've had all that, like, stress.
This is.
Council shut you down, shut shop, dreams done, see you later.
Yeah.
Then old mate throws you a line.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Yeah. Hope. So yeah, like, he finished up, he said that he was finishing up in like a month. So that month was like the longest month of my life, because we were just waiting to get planning, like, to get it all, what are we going to do? You know,
this is insane. It's like, it's just meant to be. That's crazy.
And then we got in there, like, his shop had been there for 23 years. So we got in there. And, like, painted it.
We organised for the Express Advocate to come out and say, like, a farewell for Dave. And they did a photo shoot. And we asked him if it was okay to do that. And, yeah, they gave him
respect.
They gave him a nice...
Respect, Dave. Shout out to Dave.
He's, he was a legend. Like, he served the community for a long time.
Yeah.
So he did. And many generations went to him, like, grandfather, grandson. So people remember him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got in there, me and my dad, again, done another barbershop.
Yeah.
Repaint. Yeah. It was just like, you know, but it was, so we got in there, and I remember we were opening on a Thursday, and I said to Laura, just
give me a hand. Were you nervous? Sweating? Yeah.
Is anyone going to come?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
were you sort of thinking, are the original customers going to come back also? Like, are we going to... Yeah. Lose some of that traction there.
Yeah. Well, one fella in particular told me outside the shop that nobody will ever want a woman to cut their hair. They'll never accept a woman barber in there. And I'm like...
Appointments? What do you want appointments for? You're not doing appointments.
It's not the doctors.
Like, oh, okay.
You only get an appointment if you go to the doctors. So you just said this generational thing, like, okay.
Got to change. It's going to take mentality.
A bit of time. Yeah, it's going to take a bit of time.
So we had like new customers, like younger customers, I would say, from I picked up in the garage who were wanting the fades and stuff. And then we had the existing clientele who were like set in their ways.
10-minute haircuts, just clip over, comb.
Yep.
Nothing fancy.
And away you go.
So, yeah, we opened up on a Thursday, and I said to Laura, who was working elsewhere, just come give me a hand on Thursday.
I left my job before it opened. I handed in my notice before the shop opened.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was in we went in that morning together.
Yeah, we went in that morning, and we just...
And we never looked up. We just started cutting whenever they came in.
Yeah.
And that was us, like, from... We were in there from 8, because Dave opened at 8, so we went in there about 7.
Oh, he's open at 8, he's open early.
Because Dave opened early, so we kind of stuck to that for a while. And we went in early to prepare the towels and set up for the day, and there were people waiting outside at the window. And it was such a small shop, you had nowhere to hide. So, yeah, we welcomed them in and started cutting, and that was it. It was just busy. Went.
And then the atmosphere, like everything, like positively picked up then.
Yeah, 100%. Like it was positive more, like it was definitely more positive than it was the few negative each day.
Yeah, it was heaps of fun. Like, it was a smaller shop.
Don't want no girls cutting me hair.
We just had a bit of music on, and we're just having a laugh of all different ages of fellas. And
people would come in and play the guitar, and
really?
it was such a cozy, welcoming, just atmosphere. It was good.
Be coming in waiting. Some people would be waiting like over an hour, because at that time we did some appointments and some walk-ins on different days. Like we were trying to integrate the appointment system.
Yeah, it's like the old with the new, like the technology booking people in.
Because you do still see some of those older barbers where it's still got just the bench seat, sit down, chill until you get it done. So, and then you were in that shop, and then now you've... So,
well, we were doing big days in that other shop, like 6 days a week. Me and Laura would be just cutting away. On Thursdays, I'd be in there from like 7 in the morning to like 11 o'clock at night, just cutting. Like thankfully, our parents were helping us with the home and the kids and stuff, because we just
didn't expect it to be so busy so soon. I never expected to be going in to the business as much as what I did. I expected in the beginning that I would support the startup and stuff, but we didn't expect it to happen.
Oh,
the timing.
Were you gonna just sort of
give me a
think
hand?
I'll lend a hand and then I'll
give
go back
hand.
To do what I was doing beforehand.
Well, I wasn't even planning on more, because Harrison was only 8 months and I was still breastfeeding, so he was
young,
very new. And my two older boys, I was trying to get them settled into school, so I thought it was a good idea that I sort of make the home and just kind of be around a bit for them to get them
and
settled.
Plus, they're in a new country too.
Because of that, that was the reason in thinking that I was going to stay at home for a little bit, but that wasn't how it ended up, and I ended up juggling breastfeeding, school runs, and
it's all about the grind, eh? Embrace
the grind. That's it.
Taste of fear, have a crack, you know.
Yep.
So, and it was just you two guys just in there grinding it out, sweating it out, getting it done, and then we needed
someone else. We didn't have anyone, so we put the chair. I remember this is Laura's idea.
So
like
we prayed first because we really needed help. So as we always did, we were like, "Please send us help, God. We just need a really good barber." And I said, Daniel, I believe that if we don't put the chair in place, then God might have the right barber just waiting for us, but we're not ready for him. So or her and I was like, get the chair, put the chair in the mirror and prepare the space. And then literally in comes Chris. Ron helped us, So Ron was an emergency when my youngest took sick one time and I wasn't available.
Yep.
And so Daniel was in doing it on his own. And Ron is another.
So Ron Harmon is a barber who was barbering the Tookley, the community for over 25 years. Everyone knew him, Ron and Dave were the two barbers.
Oh, okay.
So he used to walk past, and that day that Laura was ill. He walked past and I was like, Ron, come and give us a hand. So he started cutting as well all the pensioners and stuff like that.
Yeah, so he played a big part in helping us in them early days.
And that would have been good too for him sort of having the ties in with the community.
Yeah.
Like with you guys and having some of these, 100%. Some of the older customers still coming in that had those ties to Dave's shop,
And knew him,
100%. And then Chris came along. Chris came in for a haircut and we got chatting and he shared with me that he used to be a barber back in the Philippines and that he was now doing a cert, whatever, 3 in home care or something like that. I'm like, what, really? How long were you a barber? And he said, 17 years. And I was like, really, can you come in? Like, would you like to join us? And he came in the next day and did a haircut. Lucky. Yeah.
And 17 years experience. Yeah. And he doesn't muck around.
When came in with these big scissors. And when he pulled him out, I remember thinking, like,
he also,
are they legal?
he was also ex-Special Forces in the Philippines. So I was like, this is a hot sand.
Really?
Yeah, so that was like what? Yeah.
And just having, you know, that's just giving you guys extra momentum for where you wanted to push hearts and minds and what that means.
Mm.
And then having that common, you know, the common goal, but just the commonality of the armed forces and the barber and, what was a little bit of his story? Has Chris been here a while too? Or
so Chris was probably...
His wife is a nurse and she a year came before first. Us.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, so he was quite new as well. Like. So that was...
They'd made a big move. They'd done the whole transition over. Her family, I think, live here, her mom and dad. But yeah, they all moved from the Philippines. She's a nurse and, Chris is now full-time and she's got the two little ones at home and she looks after them and... We'll go back to nursing whenever she's ready.
Ah, okay.
So, Chris is a hard worker. Chris is a real family man, real worker.
Yeah.
That's good.
And so you got Chris on and then that just started growing and getting apprentices on or more people added to the team.
Vinny came on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there was the four of us were just...
There was no room for me. I had to come out for a bit at some point. I was able to come out for a bit.
And this is in the
small shop.
Still the small shop.
Yeah. We had no room. We were like, this is not.
And then Laura said to me, we're going home one day, and she's like, you know, that shop's there. That's for lease. Mm. I was like, oh, no. That's too big. That's way too big. No, what about, you know, because we'd always planned. The vision was like a barbershop, the cafe. Like back in Wales, this was the plan, like. And she's like, you could do
it. Even back then, that was it. Like barbershop, coffee.
Space. It was all about a...
Yeah.
You know. Social space.
Yeah.
So we went and...
See, that's spot on. Social space.
Mm.
You know, where you're sitting down, you're having the coffee. It's about connection. Yeah.
Just connection and community and conversation and just somewhere for people to come and... Like, it's been really good having the coffee bars opened it up to so many more people. Men bring their families in and the young boys will have milkshake while dad's getting his haircut or they'll all come together and father and son and wedding parties. You know, there's so many different types of groups and women as well. Like, there was 3 generations in this morning, Yvonne, her daughter and their granddaughter. Just sitting having a cuppa and chatting about life things, important life things, and that's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome, having that culture. Like where you got, you know, it's sort of split in half, but then it's not.
Mm.
You know, it all folds into one and where some, you know, where they start, might start off having coffees here and there and then they go, we'll give this a crack. And
there's two different communities in one space. Like
you've
got your coffee regulars that come in every morning and I'm chatting.
So new shop. So where's it at now?
We got the new shop 8 months into the small shop.
Really? Yeah.
So we opened the current shop in 2017.
You don't muck around. You fast track the whole bloody way, don't you?
So we took over Dave's in February 2017. And then we opened the other shop a week before Christmas 2017.
Yeah.
So in the same year. So my dad did three shops in 1 year. And then from there, it's gone from, yeah, it's gone from three chairs to seven chairs to a coffee bar to...
And that's, you know, just what happens, but what's gone on to make that happen has been building connections with our team and building trust and relationships with each other in the team. And
definitely a team effort.
Yeah. Yep.
It isn't just...
It's not just us. It's,
it's getting the right people in and just trying to build up people and everyone has like a... You know, we're all working... It's a heap of cogs.
Mm. Yeah. And, like, you know, and having those cogs turn and, like, is it hard to bring in the right cog? Because you just don't want anybody that cuts air. You got to have, you 100%. Know, be immersed in not just a barber culture. This is hearts and minds culture here.
Yeah, 100%. Like, we've been interviewing recently for our second store that's coming up. And that's so... Exactly how it is. Like, this is a family you're coming into, and we can't just bring anybody then that's going to upset that or not, you know, be on the same wavelength because you're going to come in and interrupt the frequency.
Doesn't matter how good like a barber they are.
Yeah.
Mm. Do you know what I mean?
It's all about attitude. Well.
Mm. Yeah.
Attitude determines your altitude.
Yeah. Like that. Like nice. That? Nice. I'll remember that. Yeah. Keep that in the bank.
Yeah,
but when did that pop up? Bang. For, you know, you got the first store.
Yeah,
you got the team in, coffee shops all happening, growing, customers flourishing in, hair flying everywhere. Second shop.
Yeah, we didn't want people were constantly saying us, "So when's the next one?" And for us, it wasn't about that. It was about quality. It was about quality, and it wasn't about rushing into doing a lot of something. It was more about getting what we were doing, as best as we could do it. Like,
Because we're learning really as we're going along. Like, it's not just barbering. It's a whole facet of other things now, which help, like with teams and then there's like the business side of things, trying to figure that all out.
Yeah, see, that's great. It's not just churning it out. It's building up, you know, the quality of what Hearts and Minds is and just... barbering as a whole.
Building trust in the brand. If every haircut has to go out, it has to represent Hearts and Minds as a brand. So when you look at Hearts and Minds, wherever it is, you know that you're going to get that same quality from any of the barbers. And people are experiencing that. They'll go in and they'll have a haircut with Chris and they'll think, wow, Chris is like amazing. I'm only going to go to Chris. And then they'll try a haircut maybe with Vinny or Daniel and they're like, wow, oh, it's really good. Actually, you can go to anyone. And so the standard is across as a whole. Mm. And that's what we strive for. That's what we value. It's like keeping the standard.
No matter who you're with, you're going to get looked after.
Good experience.
You're going to get a good experience. You're going to get a good cut.
Just building up that skill development as a team as a whole.
Yeah.
Just making sure the standards.
Yeah. So we were never keen to just rush out and do a franchise or like, it's not about money for us. Yes, obviously everybody needs to make a living.
Yeah, you need a roof over your head.
You enjoy a lifestyle, but if it's just about money, then it's not for us. That's not what it's about. Yeah.
Good things will come.
Yeah.
And now to look at good things that come, second store.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So in terms of like, We were starting to toy with the idea of like opening another shop, and it was like, okay, cool. Let's not rush into this. Let's find the right place. We'd looked at a few other places.
Always we pray about it.
Yeah, of course. We looked at a few different locations, areas, like Terrigal, was one of them as well. And then I think one of the big things was, okay, where are we going to make
A difference,
an impact. And we just felt Wyong
community
as a whole
could do with having that community place to come and experience.
See, and I want to say I really appreciate it because I grew up in Wyong And I know, you know, the good things that happened there, the bad thing that happened there. You got that in a lot of communities, but just me being in that environment as a youngster and growing up in that, and Shannon too, and just seeing the rise of Wyong as a whole, like all the different shops that are sprouting up here and there, and now throwing you guys in the mix. And then, so how did that come along? So
we were thinking it, and then someone else dropped our names into a conversation, and
through mutual friends, a guy who's trying to, you know, do good things in Wyong, his name is Matt Laster, contacted us coincidentally as we were in Wyong looking around.
We were already looking at units.
You guys just seemed to be in the right place at the bloody right
time.
Well,
you just have to say, be willing to say yes, and then God connects the dots. That's what I believe was happening. And
paying it forward.
We had a conversation with him and his business partner Nathan, and what was initially was on the table, we were wrestling with it. We're wrestling with that location. We actually said no to it just because we didn't feel.
We didn't have a piece about it. We were going to take on an upper part of the building, and we had a few different ideas. Things were being dangled, and you just have to discern what's the right thing for us and our family as well, and what can we do to benefit other people. Like, we have to find that balance in that.
You know, when it's just not sitting right,
and then you wouldn't want to.
You're trying to say yes,
or overstretch yourself.
100%.
So we just said no to that, and then about literally the next day, other things were being thrown at us from nowhere too. Like,
opportunities come up all the time, but it's just discerning which are the right ones for the right reason.
That's right.
And just saying yes or no. And we had a piece about the opportunity for the shop that we've agreed on in Wyong.
They came back to us a week later and said, what about this location?
Yeah.
And we were like, okay, yeah. That is cool. Let's do that.
Let's bring hearts and minds there and see if we can. We believe there's a revival, like a big boom going on, and will go on in Wyong.
Yep.
I think it's exciting.
It is. So how's it all going with the second shop? Are yous allowed? I shouldn't say is it allowed. Are yous allowed to put the date out there? Or is there anything that's set in stone as yet? Or are you still trying to get it together, get the right barbecue in? Is it tight lips? What's going on?
No,
we're pretty straight up. Like, we're pretty transparent. We'll just tell it as it is, because if you don't, I think other people will be making stuff up and telling you anyway.
Yep.
So, yeah, if you ask us, we'll just tell you the truth. Yep. So we're aiming to open for Lovelands Festival, which is
February 8th,
an awesome... Saturday. Awesome festival that's happening in Wyong the last 3 years, is it, or more?
Yeah, this will be the fourth year.
Year. So really, really good festival, and really highlights what Wyong has to offer.
That is
and
good
draws
timing.
Heaps of people into the area. Lots going on, from live music to circus acts, like the
Sea Gypsies are playing.
Yeah.
We're big fans of the Sea Gypsies. So shout out to the Sea Gypsies.
Yeah, they're just north head. Yeah.
They actually played in our shop on the opening of the current shop in Tookley.
Oh, really?
So it's pretty cool that they're playing in Wyong when we were trying to open up. So hopefully we're opening Wyong and hopefully get the Sea Gypsies down there to play as well. So.
I don't know about that. Awesome. But our goal is the aim for that weekend. But
awesome.
If we have to change it, we have to change it. We're not going to set anything in stone, but that's our goal. And everything's looking pretty straightforward. It's going to plan.
Yep.
We're in there at the minute with different trades ones.
So talking about trades, how's Dad going?
How's he?
How's Dad going?
Dad's doing awesome.
He's killing it.
He's still got it.
Yeah.
Got his sweat out.
Yeah, he's in there with...
Shout out to Dad.
Shout out to Dad. He's running the show with... The plumber and the electricians are all coming in, and
they're locals. They're coming for coffees,
too,
and they've been part of the journey of it, kind of growing, and it's nice to be able to share it with other people.
That's awesome.
And yeah, keep them involved. So
Love Lanes, that's what we're aiming for.
Mm-hmm.
That's the date.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hope that all falls into place for you. So Hearts and Minds, what do you guys, like as a couple, as representatives for your team and just barbers as a whole, what would you want to put out, like a message you want to put out in the atmosphere for, it's for people like you guys that are just up and left, chase your dream, go after it, or that, or young barbers that are coming up through the through the ranks, is there a, take a minute, it's all good.
What would we say to
I would just say nothing's
to
impossible.
Other barbers, or I would say to anyone, regardless of barbers, if you've got time to think about it, you've got time to do it. So that could be anything. You could be in your whatever current situation you're in, and you may not be happy. You know, whatever the goal is, set that goal and work back, and then work back to where you are now, and then go, okay, what's the first step I've got to do? And just do it, you've got to be ready to grind and do it, because...
Go all in, and nothing's impossible, and you can dream big or you can dream small, either way. You have a choice, just make them as big and as bold as you like. It's totally up to you. You can design it to be whatever way you like.
No one's going to do it for you. It's you.
That's it.
So,
take ownership, yeah.
And it doesn't matter what your circumstances look like now, because nothing's forever. You can change. You can turn everything around. At one point, I was homeless, and I was a teenage mother, and I was going through so much, and I never thought that I would be happily married with a successful business, feeling as blessed as I do today in a beautiful country on the other side of the world. So anything's possible for anybody, regardless of what your circumstances might look like at this current moment. All you have to do is make a decision of what you would like it to look like, and then work towards it, and seek out the people, spend time with people who have done it, or
surround yourself
who have that mindset that you need to be around. Be like iron sharpens iron. You need to be around people that you become like the five people you spend the most time with. Just watch who those five are, really, choose them wisely. So
spot on, guys.
Yeah.
And for us, we can't get stagnant now.
Yeah.
You've got to.
No.
What's next?
Keep leading the way.
That's it.
Trying to innovate. Never stop trying.
Yeah, and like you said, look at you two. Iron sharpens iron.
Yeah.
You're doing it really well. And I really appreciate you guys coming here. But before we wrap it up, how can people get in contact with you? Social media, throw that stuff out in the atmosphere. Get it out.
Yeah, so just give us a like on Facebook or Instagram. And yeah, you can check out our feeds. You can also book online through the tabs. So get your appointment, come down, chill out, relax, have a beer and a fresh cut.
We'll do some nice specialty coffee too, so you can enjoy a nice cold brew or an espresso.
Oh, I love a cold brew.
Also, we're developing an app at the minute that you'll be able to download. We'll have some content on there, like a blog, which will feature different things, like what we think is hot and what's not right now. And our barbers will be getting involved. Our team will be involved in that, and giving them a platform to talk about all things like fashion and hair and stuff. So
nice.
Yeah, you'll be able to follow some of that.
Definitely will be. Well, Danny, Laura, thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you.
And I can't wait for this new shop to open. I'll be wheeling in.
Thanks, Jake.
Thank you so much. You're a legend. Thank you.
See? What a journey these guys have been on. Awesome stuff. And how everything seemed to fall into place. And I hope that's the story going forward for these guys and the barber emporiums that they got going. Great stuff. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can get me on Instagram at Street Rolling Cheetah or email one word, streetrollingcheetah@gmail.com. And we're also got a Facebook page, which is Keep Rolling with Jake Briggs. So check it out. And if you liked what was put out there, hit the subscribe button. Be much appreciated. And want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here. And they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, we'll see you on the next one.